Okay, welcome everyone. Parshas Emor Tafshin Pei Dalet. Parshas Emor Tafshin Pei Dalet. I forgot to get a chumash. Usually there's a chumash here. There it is. Tafshin Pei Dalet, Parshas Emor. The most famous parts of the parsha are two most famous parts. The laws of the Kohanim, as well as the festivals. All of the Yomim Tovim are listed in this week's Parsha, in this week's Torah reading. And everyone knows all the holidays, right? Pesach, which we are just had, Shavuos, Sviras Omer, which we're counting the Omer in between Pesach and Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, the New Year, Yom Kippur, Sukkos, where we sit in the sukkah, we shake lulav and esrog, and I think that's it. There's five. These are the three main holidays: Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, and then there's Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Those are five. Oh, and Shmini Atzeres. I forgot Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres is the last day of Yom of Sukkos, and it's a separate holiday, even though it's really kind of flows very nicely, but it's a separate holiday, and we call it Shemini Atzeres Simchas Torah, the holiday where we celebrate the Torah. It's a whole different discussion why we celebrate it on Shemini Atzeres during Sukkos and not on Shavuos. That'll be for next year maybe, but those are the two main themes. Now, tucked within, I'm going to hopefully get to the festivals later, but tucked within the laws of the Kohanim is a very interesting pasuk. This is in chapter 22, verse 32. So it's not quite in the beginning of the parsha, but it's, I guess, right around halfway through, right before the festival. It says as follows. So verse 32, it says, Velo, and in 680, 681 in the blue English Art School Chumash, the bottom line, it says, Velo, sechalelu es shem kadshi, you shall not desecrate my holy name. This is as if God was talking. V'nikdashti b'seich b'nei Yisrael, rather I should be sanctified among the children of Israel. I am Hashem, ani Hashem mekadeshchem. I am Hashem who sanctifies you, who took you out of Egypt, etc. This mitzvah is one of the famous mitzvahs, one of the most famous mitzvahs in the Torah, and I guess the most famous avera in the Torah, from the most famous, we would call it Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem, sanctifying God's name, desecrating God's name. And I think we spoke about this, I don't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago, in the practical sense, what it means. And we'll touch upon that again, just because it's important to review and to remember the basics. However, just to go, let's take a step back. What does it mean? Sanctifying Hashem's name. What does this mean to desecrate Hashem's name? Can Hashem's name be desecrated by a human being? Can Hashem's name be sanctified by a human being? Is there something that Hashem is missing that we can fill? Is there something that Hashem that we can take away from Hashem? And like, how does this all work? What does the word Kodesh mean? Anyone here know what the word Kodesh means? So everyone, Steve, I'm very good at lip reading, but you can say it aloud now that you're unmuted.
Holy.
Holy is a very good word. It's an English translation. It's not a precise translation, but that's the classic definition. I think the more accurate translation, which is, again, used also, is sanctified. So Kodesh means to be like sanctified. In Kedushin, there's a very interesting concept. When a person gets married, when a Jewish person gets married, there's a stage one which is called a kiddushin, and stage two is called a nisuin. Now, we don't really practice, I mean, we do halachically practice this, but in the olden days, in the times of the Gemara, there was a kiddushin stage where someone sanctified his wife. He was mekadesh his wife with a ring or other ways. The sanctification of a wife is very confusing, because kiddushin means the same root word, the same shoresh, as holy, as sanctified, as kadosh. Now, we don't technically we don't smear any oil on our wife. We don't bless them. They don't become holy. They don't start floating up to heaven when we get married. Like, what does it mean that we make them holy, make them sanctified? What is that supposed to mean? So there's something different about the word than just the word holy. Something deeper, something more precise. I remember my Rebbe, when we learned Kiddushin in 12th grade, I think it was, he posed this question to us. And he explained that the word Kiddush means separate and unique from everyone else. That is what it means. Exalted and above everything else. So what's unique about a marriage, I was in the middle of explaining, I'm sorry, I forgot to finish. In the olden days, they used to do kiddushin, and they used to wait a whole other year until they actually got married, until they had the chuppah. Now, why is this so? It's a whole different discussion why they did it like that. Nowadays, we do it all on the wedding night, and we do it all together. But the kiddushin basically separates this woman, and it makes her, I guess, betrothed to this person, and they cannot separate. She cannot go marry anyone else. Now, they're not officially completely married, but she is now sanctified to him, for him. Now she cannot go to anyone else. So we see that there's a unique stage which is defined by the word kiddush, kiddushin. We find, again, when we say in the Torah, in the blessing under the chuppah, we say, the Masada Kiddushin says it, al yedei chuppah v'kiddushin. And again, this is a whole long thought I'm going to share with you in 1 minute, just to bring out the point. The commentaries ask, what comes first, kiddushin or chuppah? Well, we do it at the same time, but halachically, the kiddushin comes first, and then the nisuin, the marriage, comes second. So what is it referring to? Why is it backwards in the blessing? Chuppah is first in the blessing, kiddushin. Alidei chuppah v'kiddushin. Next time you go to a wedding, you'll listen out. Alidei chuppah v'kiddushin. Chuppah is first. So the commentaries explain, it's not referring to our chuppah, it's referring to Hashem's chuppah with us. When Hashem took us on as a nation on Shavuos, alidei chuppah, Hashem put the mountain on our head. So it was a scary thing. It wasn't meant to be like that, perhaps. But the commentaries explain, no, it was meant to be like that. That was our chuppah. Okay? So we see that even Hashem and Kiddushin, Hashem gave us the Torah. Hashem gave us a gift. And Hashem basically, so to speak, acquired us with chuppah and Kiddushin the same way we are acquired. See the same thing again. We as a nation have some sort of Kiddushin. We're unique. We're special. We're separate from everyone else. We're above everyone else. That's what the word Kiddushin means. So again, when Kohanim, they're more Kadosh, and anything that was brought into the Beis HaMikdash, into the temple, they're Kadosh. Why does it mean Kadosh? It means separate and unique and above other things, everything else. That is the word Kiddushin. And I guess the English word sanctify is kind of explains that a little bit, but again, it's not a perfect translation. Now, let's go back to us. When we sanctify God's name, we're being Mekadeshim Shemayim, what are we doing? What are we trying to do? Last week, we spoke about it a little bit. We said that last week, it says we're supposed to be Mekadesh ourselves. We're supposed to sanctify ourselves. Right? It says, Kedoshim Tir, you shall be holy, you shall be sanctified. How do we explain it? Separate yourselves from the things in this world. Separate yourselves from, don't be attached to things in this world. How did we explain that? Doesn't necessarily mean we can't be doing things in this world, we can't, it means we shouldn't be attached to things. We shouldn't feel like we're connected to things. We can't separate ourselves from these things. So again, what does Kiddush mean? Does Kiddush mean the Mekadosh ourselves, to live a higher life, means to separate ourselves? Well, not literally, clearly not literally. So separating ourselves from this world means is a conduit, is a tool that we can use to sanctify ourselves. What are we trying to do? What is the end result? What's the end goal? What's the goal we're trying to achieve? So explains the Sifter Chaim, Rav Chaim Friedlander, Zichar Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, who was the famous Rosh Yeshiva of a few different yeshivas, but he was the Mashkiach, the spiritual leader, spiritual guide of the famous yeshiva in Panovich, in the Panovich yeshiva, I should say, in Bnei Brak. He explains as follows. The word Kiddushin, the word Kiddush, like we said before, when it comes to our life and our spiritual world, it means raising ourselves higher, closer to our source, closer to Hashem, separating ourselves from, so to speak, separating ourselves from the regular people, from mundane, from everyone else, basically. Not that everyone else is bad. Every single person is separating themselves from the crowd, from the herd mentality, from everyone else doing everything by rote, separate ourselves, connecting ourselves to Hashem himself, to our source. That's what Kiddush means. That's what, in last week's parasha, we said, Kiddushim tiyu, you shall be holy. Separate yourselves from being attached to this world. That's how we connect ourselves to Hashem. In this week's parasha, we're talking about sanctifying Hashem's name. It's the same thing. Connecting ourselves to our source, connecting ourselves to Hashem. That is how, that is the ultimate way of sanctifying Hashem's name. And Lahavdil, the flip side, pulling ourselves, or I should say, pushing ourselves away from Hashem, that is what it means to be mechal Hashem Shema, to desecrate Hashem's name. Bringing ourselves closer to Hashem, sanctifying Hashem's name, pulling ourselves away from Hashem is desecrating Hashem's name. Now, how do we bring ourselves closer to Hashem? How do we push ourselves away from Hashem? Well, we have a user's manual, right? It doesn't have to be the blue one. It could be anyone. We got 613 rules. And pretty much, I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, obviously. But the mitzvahs that we do, every time we do a mitzvah, we're sanctifying Hashem's name. The greater the mitzvah, the greater Hashem's name is sanctified. Every time we, chas v'shalom, do an avera, we are desecrating Hashem's name. There are other ways of desecrating Hashem's name. There are other ways of sanctifying Hashem's name. Another way of sanctifying Hashem's name is the more famous one, which is when someone who is not Jewish, or even if someone's Jewish, looks at you and says, wow, praiseworthy are those people who act that way, whatever it may be. And because you're Jewish, you act that way, especially if you walk around with a kippah and you're noticeably Jewish. Someone looks around and says, praiseworthy is that person who their children are acting so nicely in the store. It happens to me once in a while. Sometimes my kids act like 2-year-olds, but sometimes, usually, they're pretty nice and they treat me nicely. And they say, and people walk around and say, wow, such beautiful red hair your children have. And they're acting so nicely. And it's, that's a Kiddush Hashem. And if someone looks around and says, wow, those rowdy kids, oh God, that's a Chilul Hashem. But that's another way. But the real, not real, they're both real, but the most important way to sanctify Hashem's name is by doing the mitzvot. The greatest way of sanctifying, not the greatest, I take that back, but the greater way of sanctifying Hashem's name is sanctifying Hashem's name in public. When we sanctify Hashem's name in public, again, the greater, the more, not only am I coming closer to my creator, to my source, I'm bringing everyone else around me closer to Hashem. Everyone else is saying, wow, this is how it's like. Again, there's so much to talk about, but again, we're on a timer, but when we, like, for example, I could learn Torah myself. I could share Torah with others. I learned Torah myself. It's a great mitzvah. Share Torah with others. That's an even greater Kiddush Hashem. Because now I'm bringing other people into the loop. I'm bringing other people into the fold. And now that's a greater Kiddush Hashem. Now I'm saying everyone else around me is coming, connecting and coming closer. That's an even greater Kiddush Hashem than just studying on my own. And that's why there's a big push even among the intellectual rabbis who are studying Torah all day. There's a great push to give classes. There's even it could be a Kirov class, and it could be giving Torah and yeshiva to students on a very, very high level. Different strokes with different folks, but it's the same idea. When my Rebbe gives a class to 30, 40, 50 students in his shir room and giving shir, and we're learning a high level, that's his version of in public, studying Torah in public. When I'm giving a parsha class to all of the wonderful people who are listening here, that's also the same thing. It's studying Torah in public. It's the greatest version, greatest level of Kiddush Hashem. Now, the flip side is very sad, very scary to think about, but it's the same thing. What is the greatest Chilul Hashem? Some people would say the greatest Chilul Hashem is walking in the store and your kids being rowdy. Now, that's maybe not the best thing to do. It's maybe a little bit of a Chilul Hashem, but the reality is the greatest Chilul Hashem is desecrating Hashem's name. What's the greatest way of, the worst way of desecrating Hashem's name is by going against his will and not doing his mitzvos. And even greater version of the desecration is doing so in public. And that is again, there's halachically and if we think about it, there's so much there's so much out there we can not feel so bad and feel guilty because so many of us don't have the upbringing, and we're not doing it on purpose. We're doing it because this is how we were taught. We weren't taught that the mitzvahs were important. Maybe we weren't taught as children the averus were desecrating Hashem's name is important is a bad thing. And again, I'm not trying to give a personal mussar shmooze. I'm just trying to bring out the real true idea over here, which is that conceptually, when we desecrate Hashem's name in public, right? When a person goes, again, I'll give you dozens of different examples, just not to box myself in. Studying Torah is one example. When a person is again, generally we shy away from publicizing our mitzvahs. We shy away from publicizing and flaunting our good deeds. But there are certain instances where we're supposed to. The Rambam says when we give charity, when we give tzedakah, we are supposed to put our names on those donations, big names on buildings. These are things we're supposed to do. Why? It's a Kiddush Hashem. Someone says, oh, wow. I don't want to give anyone's names, but just insert your name here. Whoever you are. Wow. Person X. He thinks that Torah is so important. He gave $100,000 to whatever, or $50,000 to whatever thingy. His name is on the thing. Wow, maybe I'll follow suit. That's a great Kiddush Hashem. Not only are you doing it privately mitzvah, you're showing everyone else, and you're bringing out not only your private donation, not only your private charity, not only your private philanthropy. Everyone else around you can now see and say, wow, maybe I can do the same thing. That's sanctification in public. It's showing Hashem's name, showing Hashem that I value tzedakah. And you're doing it in public. It's one of the important things that we're supposed to do publicly. Again,
Rabbi Farkas, isn't the highest level of giving is to give sneezily and to not do it publicly?
So, very good. There is a concept when we're giving private charity to private people, there is no room for publicly telling, by the way, you know that guy? He didn't have any bread on his table. I was the one who supported him, and therefore he had bread on his table because of me. That's not the way to do it. Obviously, it's yes. And again, Linda, on a personal level, there is a very, very big place for giving mitznias. However, the Rambam says that as far as Kiddush Hashem is concerned, again, if you have a very, very personal question, ask your rabbi, ask your posik. If I'm your rabbi, you're in trouble because I'm telling you to publicize it. If you ask, you could ask whichever Rabbi Greenblatt, Rabbi Tendler, whoever your rabbi may be. But there is a time and place. When I give an example, when someone's giving money to Torah prep, right? No, you want to be a matcher, put your name on the thing. Let everyone see that I give money and I'm whatever. I don't, I hate
well,
to.
It's, you're talking about two different things. One is giving tzedakah, which, yes, there is a level of best to worst ways of giving tzedakah. And the other way is what you're talking about when you're not giving tzedakah, but you're aiding an institution. I don't call that tzedakah. When I give money to the shul, I don't call that tzedakah. Okay?
Right. No,
so,
very
and
good.
that's what you're talking about that needs to be publicized. That
right.
aspect of giving. Giving is several different ways to be giving.
Right. No, sure. Leslie, very good. Leslie just crystallized it. He explained it very beautifully. Now, there are instances where I can give money to Dom Chay Shabbos, and it's technically is tzedakah, but again, it's an organization. So you're not doing it on a personal level. Those should also be publicized. If I can be a, I mean, I am not in that position, but if I can be a matcher for Tom Cheshavis or for Bikur Cholim or for all of these things that are tzedakah as well, yes, there's a, Linda has a point. There is, on a personal level, there's a time and place where there's, you're supposed to give mitznias, you're supposed to give privately because it can get to you, can get to your heart, can get to your mind, can make you feel very haughty. There's a time and place for that, that's true. And there's a time and place for trying to influence other people to say, look, I'm doing this, I put my name here, maybe come join me. It's a big part of this Kiddush Hashem. And again, practically, halachically, ask the rabbi, whoever your rabbi may be. If you ask me, I already gave you my opinion on what I think is more important, but everyone else can have their own opinion on it. Be it as it may, whether the actual psak will be one way or the other, the point I think is well taken, that there is a time and place to bring out the name of Hashem to show everyone, look, this is important to me. I'm coming closer to Hashem. I'm want to be mashpia. I want it to have an effect on everyone else around me. Okay. So that is basically what Kiddush Hashem is. I think there's dozens or hundreds of stories you can think of, even on the top of your head, about people who were Mekadesh Hashem Shemai, who made a Kiddush Hashem. Top of your head, make sure don't think of Yamaka. But there's dozens of stories that you can talk about how people, we could all Google, look at the top philanthropists in America today. Not all the top rich people in America, contrary to all the Jewish pride, not all the top billionaires in America are Jewish, but almost the percentage of top donations and the philanthropy, those are almost, the numbers are staggering how many Jewish names are on the top list of the philanthropy, whether it's Jewish institutions or not Jewish institutions, hospitals, other institutions that are important for society. It's a Kiddush Hashem when the Jewish people are so generous. We see just the sheer numbers of what it means to be a generous Jew for the Orthodox world, the amount of money people make, people earn, versus the amount of money they're giving to charity. The percentages are so much higher, astronomically higher, than in the non-Jewish world, that itself is the greatest Kiddush Hashem, without going into details, without going to the nitty-gritties of every individual person. Just the amount of money that goes out is astronomical. Okay, so that will do that. I think we'll continue on.
Is that why, Rabbi, when you say Kiddush, you're sanctifying God's name over the wine? Is that the
what
same?
Do you mean? What do you mean?
You say, let's say Kiddush, and you're saying it's,
oh, so
it
we're saying,
the same?
Well, yeah, so Kiddush is really the same thing. Again, it's a whole deeper discussion. But
you're
Kiddush
saying
it,
you're
is
sanctifying God's name over.
Yeah. So, oh, interesting. So we're kind of through that there. I forgot to say this. It's cute. Everyone's going to appreciate this. So when we say Kiddusha, okay? Everyone here familiar with Kiddusha? So during davening, when the Chazan's repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei, So we say Kedusha is we read a few verses out loud, and the Chazan says, and then we say it after we, and then there's three words we say. They say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. What do we do when we say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh? I don't know what we do.
We raise our feet. We're on our toes. We're
going to tippy toes. We go up three times,
heel
right?
Heel toe. Yes.
Heel toe, right? So now, why do we do that? I don't know why we do that. So I have no idea.
Angels are on one foot. Okay. Angels, we're like angels.
Well,
we have
our feet together, but why are we hopping up? Why are we jumping up and down? We have our feet together the whole Shmona Esrei, right? We have our feet together then. Why are we hopping up and down? So I don't know the real answer. I'm not sure. But I heard it's brought down in Sifsi Chaim, so it's definitely documented as a real source, that when we say Kadosh, how did we explain it? Is we're trying to connect to separate ourselves from the mundane and reach higher to our source. So we're jumping up. We're jumping up to try to show with our bodies that we're trying to elevate ourselves. We're trying to go higher. We're jumping. Interesting. You never thought of that, did you? So anyways, that was fun. That was that. Okay. It's good. Fine. Perfect. Now let's talk about Yom Tov. Holiday season. What else do I want to talk about? I want to talk about, shoot, I'm not going to have time to talk about that. Oh, well. Simchas Yom Tov. There's a halacha that we must be happy on Yom Tov. The whole, all the Yom Tovim right after I ended off chapter 23. Goes and talks about all of the holidays. Now, there's a halacha, there's a law that you have to be happy on the holidays. Okay? So, well, part of the law is that you're supposed to drink wine on the holidays, eat meat, special commandment to eat meat by the meal. And there's some opinions hold that you're not even, you don't even fulfill your mitzvah with chicken. You have to have actual meat. Because chicken is a bird. You technically aren't necessarily obligated to do that, but definitely, if it tastes good, anyways, it's a good mitzvah to stringency to rely on to hold with. This is not brought down technically in our parasha. This mitzvah, the commandment to be happy. It's called the. It says. It's a famous song. We probably most of us are familiar with it. You should be happy on the holiday. You should be happy. A little repetitive. That's not for now. However, this mitzvah is always during summer break, always during summer vacation. So we never talk about this anyways during that Torah portion, during that Torah reading. So it talks about the holidays here. So we'll talk about Simchas Yom Tov, talk about being happy on Yom Tov. So there's a very interesting pasuk in the middle of the holiday. So we go chapter 23. I'm just going to read you the things, festivals. We talk about Pesach, talk about Sfiras HaOmer, counting of the Omer. We are in the middle of doing that now. Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Sukkos, Shemini Atzeres. Okay. Right in the middle, okay, in chapter 23, verse 22, it says as follows, Uvkutzrechem, and when you reap as katsir artzechem, the harvest of your land, loy sechala pa'as sadecha, you shall not remove completely the corners of your fields. Of kutzucha, the kutzucha, when you are as you reap, uvelaket katzircha loisilaket, you shall not gather the gleanings of your harvest. So I'm not so good in fancy English. I'll just explain to that to you in my English. There is a commandment, three commandments really, but over here it's brought down. It's brought down before as well, but right in the middle, the commandment of Leket Shechapea. Leket means Shechapea. There are three commandments. When a person's harvesting the field, he has to leave off a corner. He can't shave. Shave is the wrong word. He can't harvest the corners. He has to turn around and let the little corner stay. The poor people come and pick those stalks. If two stalks fall down, one or two stalks fall down from his bundles, he has to leave it there. He can't pick them up. If a bundle, one bundle falls off of the wagon, he has to leave it. Okay? What in the world are these commandments doing right in between all of the holidays? Right after Pesach, before Shavuos, what in the world are they doing here? What in the world is it doing here?
Well, if you don't have an emergency food fund for the poor people, they have to have something to eat. And so this way, there is the, it's built in to our psyche that you've got to leave these things. If it falls, you leave it.
Very
and
good.
Then that way the poor people can have something to celebrate.
Very good.
Leslie, also.
A1, next year, you're going to give the partial class this week.
Well, I'll be teaching in Lakewood next year. So.
But I have an even better, almost the same, but even deeper. But the same point though. Same point. So I'll do it this year, you'll do it next year, okay? No, Leslie, you really touched upon the point I wanted to talk about. But I'm gonna now add on a whole nother level. So it's gonna bring it all together. Okay. I'm going to read you a chinuch. The chinuch, the sefer chinuch, I've quoted him before. If anyone read the FTJ this past week, I quoted a sefer chinuch in there. Same thing. It was written by the Ra'ah. According to most people, it was written by the Ra'ah. He doesn't. There's no name in it, but it's cross-referenced by a lot of his other writings, and presumably it was written by him, Rabbi Aaron Halevi, acronym Ra'ah. He lived in the 12th, 13th century, I believe. Long time ago, and he writes as follows. I just printed it out. In the mitzvah tof peches, he basically codifies all of the mitzvahs. There's a list of all the mitzvahs. That's what the whole book is about, the whole sefer is about. Tof peches, 488 out of 613. So mitzvah number 488. Mitzvah l'smayach b'regalim, the mitzvah to be happy on the holidays. Says, what does it say? The chalals are included in this mitzvah. Achilas basar, the eating of meat, v'shisiyas yayin, and the drinking of wine. Lulbash gadim chadashim, wearing new clothes. Chiluk peiros, to separate fruits, minim asika, and sweets. The na'arim, for the children, l'anashim, and for the woman. I think the clothing is for the woman and the treats are for the children. But if the women want to have treats, they can have treats as well. Lischaik b'chlei shir, Mikdash, to have music in the Beis Mikdash on different holidays, of different things, fine. As it says in the Pasuk, as it says in the verse, V'samachta v'chagecha, etc., etc. And then it says something fascinating. V'noy heges, and this mitzvah zu, l'inin ha-simcha. Fine. I'm kind of paraphrasing over here. It says, V'ayver al-zev, someone who doesn't do this, and what he's going to say now, V'enei mesameach atzmai, he doesn't gladden himself, make himself happy on the holiday. Listen to the next words. U'bnei v'yisai, and his family. V'aniyim, and the poor people. Kefir chaltai, as his according to his means or capabilities. Beto aseza, he has not fulfilled this mitzvah, not fulfilled this obligation. He has bittel, he has I don't know what the word bittel means. He has desecrated this commandment, I guess. So if I eat all my meat and I become very fat, and I eat, drink all my wine, I become very happy and dancing on the tables, but I don't. Okay, I'm not going to give you a Shalom Bias class here. I don't give my wife clothes. I'm not going to talk about that now. But and I even if I do give my wife clothes, I give my children sweets, and I don't give the poor people food to eat and I give them wine to drink. I don't make my poor people happy. It's not a desecration. It's not that you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah. It's not that you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of ma'aser. It's not that you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of all those other things. You haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of simchas yamdev, of being happy on yamdev. The mitzvah of being happy on yamdev is predicated on the fact that we keep the, we help out the poor people, the downtrodden people, the people that need our help. Now, you can theoretically say that this is a technical point where the Torah is telling us, the Chinuch is telling us, well, you have fulfilled the obligation because you're a bad guy. And we say, we'll do a little loophole. Even though you're happy, we don't let you fulfill the obligation until you make everyone else happy. However, if you think about it for a moment, it's much deeper than this. We talked about this last week. What is true happiness? Last week we discussed this. True happiness is happiness that's real and happiness that lasts. When we eat a big meal of wine, it can make us happy a little bit, a nice meal of wine. Is that true happiness? How long does that last? If I had to, again, this is not necessarily a perfect example for everyone here, but let's just imagine you had a yeshiva guy. Yeshiva guy who is not necessarily the greatest learner. He's not necessarily a guy who loves learning all day, but he's in yeshiva. And he learns, he knows how to learn. And you had two guys. One guy, you give him a big pile of donuts, 50 donuts, or chocolate chip cookies for last night. And the other guy, you put him in front of a page, put him in front of a Gemara or a Chumash. So minute number one and minute number two, who's going to be happier? So even if we're very, very, idealistic, and we think that everyone loves learning, but very possible that this ninth grader, eighth grader, the one who's in front of the donuts, he's thrilled. He has all the donuts in the world, right? And the guy who's studying Torah, he's not necessarily as happy. It's hard. What happens after donut number two? Maybe, okay, donut number three. There is going to be a number, whether it's donut number seven for some people, donut number 14. Whatever that number is, that person is not going to be able to look at another donut for at least a month. The other guy, there's going to be a point, whether it's 10 minutes, 20 minutes, where he gets involved to the sugya. He gets connected where things start clicking and things start making sense. All of a sudden, things start becoming exciting and it becomes better for him. He starts feeling accomplished, feeling a feeling of self-worth, accomplishment, of connecting to something more. In the beginning, yes, it may be true. In the beginning, it may feel much more geschmack in Yiddish, much more exciting. The donuts, they have all the, whatever it may be, your version may be a steak, your version may be a donut, whatever it may be. And this guy, but at some point it's going to reverse. Even your most materialistic person, at some point, it's going to just get disgusting. Why? Because it's a facade. It's not real. It's materialism. It's gashmias. It doesn't last. It's limited. Versus the Torah is limitless. It can be hard to break in, but eventually it grows on you, and eventually it becomes so exciting. Real happiness is connecting and giving over to others and connecting to Hashem. When we do the mitzvot, we fulfill the mitzvot, we give our giving charity, and in this case, sharing our simcha with others. That is not just a technical detail. That is true happiness. The Chinuch is telling us, if we don't give to others, we don't share our simcha with others, we are not happy. Imagine we made a wedding and we didn't invite anyone to our wedding. We wouldn't be happy. It just wouldn't be happy. We can't have a wedding without sharing it with friends. And then take it a step further. There's a famous wedding hall in New York, in Williamsburg. It's a high-end wedding hall. The weddings there cost 100 grand. Now in St. Louis, you can't book a hall for less than whatever it is, but without food. I don't know. I didn't make a wedding here, but that's so I heard. But in New York, right, a regular wedding costs 30 grand, maybe a little more. and you get all the food and the band and everything. 100 grand is like cream of the crop. 15-piece band, the high-end singer, the schmorg that you can feed 500,000 people and there's only 500 guests. All the fancy wine, everything you can imagine. And you think, well, they're ruining they're raising the bar for materialism. Maybe they are. I'm not going into there. But they have a package where they, not everyone, you don't have to obligate it, but it's a beautiful package where you make a wedding there. You can partner up. This is the wedding hall has a connection, has a shutfas with a wedding hall in Israel. There's a tzedakah organization that arranged it. And you can pay for an Israeli wedding. It's not very expensive in Israel. It's around $10,000. You can pay for a very, very strict wedding, obviously, and partner up with someone in Israel and pay for their wedding. It's not charity. I mean, it's charity also. It's not just charity. It's I'm partnering with you and I'm making my simcha. My simcha is not complete. Yes, I have a lot of money. I can afford the wedding. It's not complete until I share it with a needy family in Israel. I'm giving over a part of my simcha. Now I can have a true simcha because he has a simcha and he's not having a heart attack trying to figure out how to pay for his wedding. I can now have a true simcha. That is the meaning over here. So we see, why is Leket Shecha Peah? Why is giving these gifts to the poor people? Why is it in the middle? Now we can understand. Of course it's in the middle. There is no Yom Tov, there is no Simcha without giving the poor people. There's no such thing as having a genuine true happiness, a genuine true Simcha without bringing other people, bringing needy people in. Otherwise there is no Simcha. And I guess, sorry for the crash landing, but I guess we'll end with that. And that will do it for tonight. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you everyone for coming.
Rabbi, this was my Torah portion, Imar.